Welcome to The Thread, a podcast that explores the ideas and innovations shaping a stronger, smarter energy future. This show is brought to you by Mosaic. Many pieces, one purpose. Hello, and welcome back to The Thread. My name is Liz Carpenter, and today we're talking about a challenge many utilities face as operations scale. That is, how to maintain consistent, high-quality field work as crews grow, contractors come on board, and systems continue to evolve. We'll dig into what competency really means in field operations, and how clearly defining it can help reduce rework, safety incidents, and inconsistent work practices. Today, I'm joined by Miriam Halsey and Joel Morse from Mosaic's Utility Operations Team. Miriam, Joel, welcome to The Thread. I'm so excited to have you here today. Miriam, can you start us off with a quick overview of your background and tell us more about the kind of work you've done with utilities?
Absolutely, and thank you for having us, Liz. My name is Miriam Halsey, and I'm the Director of Utility Operations here at Mosaic. I have been working in the industry for about 10 years. And in that time, I have primarily focused on the electric and vegetation management side of the house, really looking at what does competency and safety and risk mitigation look like in a holistic sense for utilities. This is everything from apprenticeships to on-the-job training, assessment programs, governance, procedures, but also the operational impact and the operational reinforcement for all of these things, with that ultimate goal of increasing the safety of the workers, of the communities, and helping utilities streamline their operations with all of those in mind.
Great. Thank you, Miriam, for joining us. And Joel, how about you? What's your background and what pulled you into workforce development and competency in field operations?
Yeah, Liz, thanks for having me to talk today with Miriam. Should be a good discussion. But yeah, senior manager for our utility operations team here at Mosaic. Been with Mosaic 10 years total, back as a boomerang, so heading on to a year back. Spent much of my time on the gas side, but also spent time with vegetation management as well as electric. Just really love the work. We're looking at people in the field, training to competency, and sending them home to their family safely. And that's value. Right? It's work that you can be proud of.
I think you hit the nail on the head, Joel. It definitely is work to be proud of. It's work that matters. And you can really see the impact of your work on a day-to-day basis. And that's part of why I'm so excited to have you all here on the show today, because you each have years of experience working with field operations teams really across North America. So various groups, various personalities, geographies, utilities, you name it. So you have a lot to bring into this conversation today. I want to get us started here by talking about scale. It's something that utilities are really struggling with right now. A lot of utilities are scaling up. Maybe they're adding crews or contractors, or maybe they're implementing a new technology or a new system. As things become more complex, as things are scaling, where do you typically see things start to wobble or break down first?
I think that's a really good question. I think you touched on it a little bit, Liz, in the opening there. You used the word inconsistency. So the first word that comes to mind for me is consistency. I think that's the first thing to wobble. I think it breaks down way before capability does. So as things scale, it's usually not like a sudden, oh my gosh, right? It's this slow drift. It kind of happens over time where you're like, wow, three people are doing the same thing in the same role, but they're all doing it differently. And it can be geographically, it can be different departments or different crews, right? Different crews, different assumptions. And so in my experience, everyone thinks they're doing it right. You know, even the person who's been doing it for 40 years, in lack of a better phrase, turning the wrench, they've done it their whole life like that.
Yeah, well, and I mean, think you kind of hit on some of that where you have all of these different streams of communications that happen, particularly when you're scaling up. And it may be scaling, you know, in different levels at different speeds and all of that. But what is that method of communication that is happening in terms of you think about a bulletin comes out? Okay, a lot of places do tailboards. Not every supervisor is going to be tailboarding the same to the same depth, asking the questions, whatever it is. One supervisor may accidentally forget. And then we have people in the field performing work in a way that is against the bulletin unintentionally. But it, and the more you scale, the more that that's just going to happen. It doesn't matter what the industry is or the area. It's just hard to hold on to all the different pieces. So it kind of, it feels like it's got to have some of that top-down support, but then a really coherent connection between the different groups, different operational groups, the training, all of that, so that that consistency, because Joel, I think that is the word, is the consistency needs to be built in structurally, but reinforced with leadership, reinforced in practice. But it's that consistency is all about what's your communication structure to be able to get that to the right people at the right time. And I think you, you know, just kind of said internal and contractors. I think that contractors is a big part of it, because how do you communicate when you're communicating through the vendor?
At some point, organizations, they realize maybe they don't have a definition of what good actually looks like for each role. Miriam, what's that moment for you, or have you experienced that moment when that lack of clarity really shows up?
I think the aha moment for working in, you know, this realm of what good looks like for a role, for a task or things, is when people really understand that competency does not mean perfection. Because competency is the baseline to keep people safe, the baseline where they can follow procedures, the baseline where they can work independently. But it is not saying that they are automatically the star, that they are the best of the things, because not everybody's going to be the star. Not everybody wants to be the star, but we want everyone at a base level where we can trust them to do the work, do it safely, correctly, following procedure, all of those things. And when we can get people to start thinking about competency in that way, it makes it more accessible. Because if we come in and doing a training thing or an assessment thing, and you say, well, we want to get people to competency, and people are thinking about perfection, they're thinking about how big that is. But it's not. Competency is the basic skills to do your job safely, correctly, and following procedure. And so for me, that's the aha moment that I look for. And once people latch onto that, it becomes much easier to tackle the operational needs or the training needs or the assessment needs to focus on that level.
Yeah, Miriam, I love what you just said, that competency does not equal perfection. I think that's an important note to keep in mind when utilities are going about actually developing their competency programs. And one thing that's interesting, too, is, you know, as individuals, as teams, we all have different definitions of what competency really looks like. So, Joel, how do you define competency in a way that's actually useful and doesn't just turn into a document that sits on a shelf?
That's the thing, the definition. I mean, there is one, right? You can look it up in Webster's or wherever you want to do, but like how people define it is really different. The way I look at it is the ability to perform the role safely, consistently, back with the whole consistent word, and effectively. And you're doing this though in real operating conditions or in the real world. So to me, it's not just like the certifications. Someone may think, okay, cool. I have a certification. Now it must mean I'm competent. Nah, I don't know. Training just tells you what to do, but competency, it shows you what actually happens. Work that's familiar to me of late is vegetation management, right, Miriam? It's like work is complex. It's one of the most dangerous jobs, I don't know, in the world. You can correct me on that. I know it's dangerous. Conditions always change. Just picture for people who don't know or understand tree work. You're out there on a tree, weather, all these different kind of conditions. So it's how you perform in those kind of ever-changing conditions really, to me, shows the competency. I'm sure you could probably add on to that, Miriam.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because I'm going to agree and also push back on you on one little piece, which is where we were talking about certification. And to me, because I think what you asked, Liz, is really important about how do you avoid it becoming something that just sits on a shelf, this static thing that doesn't actually support the workers in the field? And one way, it's not the only way, but one way is to create something that does have, whether it's a certification, a qualification, whatever it is, that people have to do periodically to show, to demonstrate that competency, but it has to mean something. And by that, I mean it has to have the rigor behind it and the defensibility to say, if someone takes this training or takes this assessment or gets this qualification every 4 years, I trust what level they're at because I know the quality of what they're going through. And what it shows me is that they are at this basic level. If they're not reaching that basic level, then maybe there are things that need some performance support or additional training, whatever it may be. Because I think it is exactly that, where it's being able to show what you do and how you do it. And that could be in the field, because I think vegetation management is a really good example in the sense that it is an incredibly dynamic situation with tree biology and work site situations. What is the moisture content of the ground? Is there internal rot to the tree? Can't always tell. But it's one of those where being able to refresh and come back every so often and say, am I still where I need to be, is so important from the safety perspective. And from, you know, anybody in training will talk about it, complacency. You could be one of the best linemen, one of the best veg workers, one of the best gas welders, and you can still get complacent. You can still have bad habits.
Absolutely. And we can talk about the idea of competency really all day and what it means, you know, as a word, as a theory, as a pedagogy, whatever it might be. But I do want to talk about what that actually looks like. You know, when we're boots on the ground, we're out with a field crew. Miriam, could you maybe share an example of a time where a clearly defined role-based competency program actually did help prevent some rework or actually did reduce a risk or even avoided an incident in day-to-day operations?
Absolutely. I've seen it many times in the work that I do. I think one of the big ones that stands out to me is an apprenticeship program I was working on. Typically what we see when an apprentice goes into their role and then when they're doing their on-the-job training, they're under a journeyman. And you'll kind of expect that they're just going to sit there and listen to the journeyman and say, okay, I just need to follow whatever they do. But I've seen apprenticeships really trying to instill that speak up culture. And I know of a specific incident where they went out and the journeyman was telling them to perform some work, some electric work. And the apprentice said, but that's not how I was taught. That is against what I was taught. And the journeyman, of course, was like, yeah, but we've always done it this way. This is how it works. The apprentice pulled up the procedure and showed them and said, look, this is not allowed. We cannot do this. And it wasn't an aggressive, right? It was literally just saying, hey, we need to do this work right and take care of each other. And this procedure says that we can't do this. And this procedure is written for a reason. And unfortunately, many procedures are written in blood. So it's this idea of like that procedure isn't just a whim. It's to help make people safer. I've also seen a lot of improvements in habits based on some competency assessment programs. You know, unfortunately, someone might fail from a bad habit that is unsafe, but it's something that they're taking back out into the field and they're having to remind themselves, but they're also reminding their peers and their colleagues. And yes, maybe it's partly because they want them to pass the assessments, but it's also helping the field be safer. So it's a really good way about really trying to instill the speak up culture in terms of work practices.
Yeah, it absolutely seems like that cultural element is keystone. I mean, if you don't have that culture built, how can your crews feel empowered to speak up? That feels like a difficult thing to instill in your team.
Very hard. I mean, culture is one of the biggest and most challenging things for utilities. But it is one of the most important, and I know a lot of utilities are invested in it. It's just not a simple solution.
Well, I want to move on to talking about contractors. We mentioned them at the beginning of our session here. Aligning contractors is a huge challenge for utilities. How do utilities get contractors working to the same standard as internal crews? I mean, so much coordination, so much communication amongst groups. How can we do that without adding so much process that it actually slows the work down?
There is a difference, unfortunately. And oftentimes it's, are we sharing the same expectations? And by we, I mean like contractors and the utilities. Are the standards the same? How they do work, is it the same or is it different? And so I think once that's aligned where they do have that shared expectation, that's when you see fewer escalations through workers, fewer surprises in the field, and ultimately you're going to have more consistent outcomes.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, I have kind of three things that I think about in this regard, and Joel talked about the first one. Consistency in roles and responsibilities, so that there is no confusion that if, you know, a welder A from a contractor versus an internal welder A, they're doing the same thing. And that makes it a lot easier to ensure that there is consistency. You're not having to divvy up the work procedures in a different way for a different contractor. It's consistent. And in some areas of utilities, that's really well set, working with unions and all of that. But in other areas with contractor companies, there's a lot more variability, and we see that pain. I think the second one is communication. And very specifically, I mean communication to the worker. Most times when there is a contractor company, even if there is some utility oversight, most of the communication from the utility goes to the contract vendor, who then dissipates it down to their workers. As with any company, any industry, you're going to get some telephoning, you're going to get some folks who do really good at that, some folks who don't, and you get this complete inconsistency in who actually knows what the procedures are, what the expectations are, what the safety parameters are. And there's some really good examples of, you know, contractors and utilities doing it well and the complete opposite. And I think that communication method is one of the biggest things for me, because if you can get directly to the worker, they're the ones who are putting their lives on the line. So I want the information getting to them. But it often takes more investment on a technology side to have some sort of system for anybody to access securely, all of these different pieces, but the criticality of it is very high for me. And then the last one is getting particularly contractor companies to understand the value from a real human sense and also a financial sense of having a competent workforce. They are going to be safer, which is key for everyone. That's just important. They're also going to be better at their jobs because they are competent, which means they're going to be making less mistakes. There's going to be less, you know, impact from any safety issues. But there's also going to be this reality that if you know how to do your job, you are more efficient. You don't have to do workarounds because you forgot what you're doing, go back, rework, all of that. And so the quality goes up, but so does the production. If you have an efficient workforce that knows what they're doing and they're not getting injured, the efficiency is there. So there's the safety argument, but there's also the business argument.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the efficiency component of this, Miriam. Safety is utilities' number one priority, of course, but they are also businesses. And they want to make sure that things are running efficiently, that they're effective, that we're keeping folks safe and serving our communities as a business. And ultimately, if that training isn't working, it's a business problem and something's got to change.
Yeah. One, and there's this idea that they have to be mutually exclusive, and they don't. And that's kind of one of those myths that I always try and dispel is, you know, additional training can actually be a business benefit. Yes, you're investing up front, but your gain down the line is much greater.
Yeah, and I think that's the cultural shift, really, or at least one amongst many. I want to go ahead and move us into talking about when things go well. Before those incidents or rework show up, I'm curious, what are those early signs that things are working, that the competency efforts are actually improving operations?
It goes kind of to Miriam's number two there with comms, right? So you see it in leadership or supervisors or managers. In my experience, their behavior changes first. Like Miriam was talking about, you know, talking or sending the message to someone, and they send an email, this telephone waterfall, and making sure that's consistent. But oftentimes you see that behavior change first. And it comes with, you know, again, more consistent coaching. We talked about tailboards. So you're going to have better tailboard conversations. So you see that often happen. And by better, it means more consistently, more often. You see that really you're putting the right people or the right crews for the right jobs. And I think that's huge. So those are some of the signals I see. And don't get it mistaken either. Like speed alone doesn't equal success. So like if we're just cruising, we may think, oh yeah, we must be doing something right. We're getting things done quicker. Well, are you getting it done competently though, right? And so it's good to differentiate between that too. If you're doing work really fast, but you're doing all this, what you, I think we mentioned a rework. If you're doing all this rework, that's not really a win. It's kind of just a fake win, in my opinion. So just keeping that in mind. But yeah, those are some of the things you can see early on.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The rework is a huge one. And there is, this is another one where there's variability on how well that's tracked. Because what are we defining as rework and how do we track and all of those things? But I think it's huge because it's saying whether or not we got it right the first time. And if you see those numbers start to drop immediately, that's a really good indicator. I think another one and I'm going to use Joel's favorite word. I'm going to say consistency. And when for this, it's consistency in how people are speaking. So if you have a large area that your utility covers and I go from one end to the other and they are talking about things in the same way, that's a huge sign about things being consistently messaged. I think the other one for me is good catches. Having a higher rate of good catch reporting is twofold indicator for me. One, it's telling me that the speak up culture is stronger because they are being willing to say, hey, you're about to do something dangerous. The other part is it's saying people are looking and catching things, which means they understand what not to do. We're looking for the basic competency. They may not know everything, but they may know that, hey, that ground isn't put on right. That's a risk. I'm going to call an all stop and we're going to fix it. That's a good catch. And that is the more that you see those reported, it means that there's confidence in being able to report safely, but also that you stop something. One of the things that is a critical data point for utilities is the serious injuries and fatalities. And it's, you know, fortunately, I think a lot of utilities look at those and they celebrate when they can bring those numbers down, if they have higher numbers, and that's awesome. But it's also one of those that if you're not having them, that doesn't actually mean anything. It's that, you know, hey, I have the rock that keeps tigers away. You can't counter that proof. And that's why I like good catches, because it's an active way to see safety.
Yeah, I think it's clear after talking with you all that competency is not just about training. It's layered. It impacts safety. It impacts quality, contractor performance, and really overall operational consistency. There's that word, consistency, again. So let's say a utility is just starting to rethink some of their competency programs. Where should they start? What's your recommendation?
That's a really good question. One comes to mind. We've talked about it, but it really defining what good looks like, but defining it for one role, if you're really going to start small, and then you would build from there. And I'm not talking just like a training catalog, but an actual role. And then you get aligned on the expectations. expectations, the decisions that specific role makes in their work, and then what it would look like in the field, the actual performance in the field. And then once that's clear, training, contractor, alignment, and metrics, those all get easier, I think. But yeah, without that clarity, it's just guessing. So that's why I would probably start with what good looks like for just one role. And then you can start really then expanding on that a little bit.
I like that because you don't have to boil the ocean on this. I am a huge advocate of trying things out, pressure test it, find out if it's right, fail fast. Because if it's not the right approach, you haven't sunk a whole lot into it and you can do something else. But I agree with you that you know, being able to articulate and agree upon true roles and responsibilities for someone is a great place to start and then build out what it would take to get there. I think for me, the other thing I would say is, you know, whether you do a small or big, get the stakeholders in the room. And by stakeholders, I do not just mean operations. I do not just mean training. I mean everyone involved. Operations, training, safety, procedures, you know, contracts, whoever it is. Because to really invest in a safety framework that builds in risk mitigation and looks at competency, you have to have all of those parties in there, because you can have the best training in the world. If there is no operational reinforcement, they're going to go back to old habits. You know, if there's really good operational reinforcement, then everybody's getting written up because they didn't have good training. So it's one of those things where you have to have the people in the room, and often utilities are siloed because honestly, it's more out of the fact that they all have too much to do. But those conversations will make actually a tackling safety more effective, and you will be getting buy-in across the organization earlier in the process rather than having to fight that battle down the road to really work towards the ultimate goal of, hey, can we roll out training? It's kind of extensive and we don't want to have operational impact. Operations, could we do mobile? And you can have these conversations early so that everyone is involved, but it's the first step to be able to say, we want to make change that sticks.
Well, Miriam and Joel, thank you so much for sharing your experience.
Well, thank you for having us, Liz. This has been a great conversation. I really get excited about talking through these ideas and the strategy and coming up with new ways to support utilities and their workers. And it's been an absolute pleasure to be here.
Thanks for having us, Liz. This has been a great discussion.
Thank you so much to everyone listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe to The Thread for more conversations on the people, processes, and technology shaping the future of energy.